On Tuesday, we started talking about virtual memory, and we'll just pretty much pick up where we left off, talk some more about some of the features that virtual memory enables, and then do some work with address translation to make sure that you're comfortable with that, and how we do translation using page tables. And if time permits, we'll talk about how page tables are actually stored in the operating system. So last time we looked at the virtual address to physical address translation and how the low order bits are your page offset, and that stays the same. And then the upper order bits of the virtual address are a virtual page number, and we look in the page table to get the physical page number. By the way, sometimes the physical page number, some people will call that a frame instead of a physical page. It's a physical frame, just another name for the same thing. And we looked at how page tables are laid out a little bit and started talking about some of the features of virtual memory. In particular, where we left off, I kind of rushed through this, was allocating space on demand. So when we load a process, the process may not actually use all of the pages that we need to allocate. So there might be big regions of code, for example, that are never touched because you never execute those functions. There might be big regions of the global data if you have some large arrays that were statically allocated that are never used. Why load those pages into memory if we don't need to? Similarly, we're going to allocate some space for the stack, and we don't actually, we may not actually grow the stack that much. So why allocate pages for the stack that might never be used? Let's allocate them on demand. So in the specific case of the stack, the OS may allocate a certain amount of memory that will be valid for the stack, but not actually allocate the space. So in this example, program's running along, it's using 12 kilobytes of the stack, and then there's a bunch more space that's potentially allocated or available for the stack. And we only want to allocate the space if needed. So we looked at this example where the stack pointer is currently pointing right here. And remember, the stack grows down from the highest address that's accessible to user space. Now, this example lists the addresses in sort of numerical order. So the stack is stack grows toward lower addresses. Right, so if you think of this virtual address space cartoon that we've drawn in the past, where the program is down here and then data and then heap grows up and the stack grows down, this would be your top user accessible address. That address is down here. So let's say we want to push a new value on the stack. So we want to push a new value here. So pushing means we need to move the stack pointer. So stack goes down, so we decrement the stack pointer to the next lowest address. Let's say we have small pages, so this causes us to fall off the edge of a page. And we need to allocate a new page. And what's actually going to happen is with the push queue tries to decrement the stack and allocate that new address, which is 0x7FFFB, it page faults. And the OS says, oh, this is in the stack region. This should be a valid access. I just need to allocate a new page of actual physical memory because the stack kind of grew off the end of what's allocated and we just need more space. So we can just respond to this exception by saying, we'll just allocate a new page. Whatever physical page is free, so the OS just has a pool of physical pages that are not currently used, It's a linked list. It takes the front of that linked list. It writes that physical page number here into the page table. And it zeroes out the contents of that page so that whatever used to be there doesn't leak information. And now it returns from the exception and retries the offending instruction. So it tries the push queue again. So the push queue tries to access 0x7FFFB. Voila, there's a valid translation. So now we can push RBX, the value, onto the first entry in that page. Our stack has just grown, and we're good to go. Any questions? So this is called demand allocation, right? We don't need to pre-allocate all the space that the program is going to use. Same idea for the heap, right? We don't need to pre-allocate a giant amount of heap because the program might not actually malloc that much space. So when malloc needs to get more memory from the OS, it can get more memory and the OS will allocate fresh pages for the heap. Now, in the two examples I gave of stack and heap, the space is empty, right? We're allocating fresh, unused space. But there are other cases where we're allocating fresh memory to access deeper into a file. So for example, if we have a large program, the code segment is not necessarily completely loaded into memory. If your program is many, many pages, the OS may load only the first few pages, and then as your execution gets deeper into the program counter accesses an address that's not a valid address, according to the page table, because it's accessing a part of the program that wasn't loaded into physical memory. So you take an exception, the OS says, oh, we're in the code segment. We just need to get the next chunk of code. So I'll go to the program on disk, and I will fetch the next page or several pages worth of code, load those pages, load the actual contents from the file. Another example we talked about is swap. So before I get to swap, I'll just say, so loading a program can be merely creating the empty page table. So we don't have to populate the content. So in exec, actually, it doesn't have to load the entire program because all it needs to do is know where on disk to go fetch those pages. Now in reality, it will fetch at least a few pages, but everything else can be handled in response to page faults. So another example, I mentioned that if we have too many processes running, and their active pages are actually oversubscribing the amount of physical memory that we have. Let's say I have several processes that are each using several gigabytes, and I only have 4 gigabytes on my laptop. What the OS will do is when one of those processes needs a fresh page because, let's say, it's growing its stack, and there's nothing on the free physical page list, it has a replacement policy. It will go find some page that's currently in use and say, oh, this hasn't been used for a while. I'm going to push the contents of that page out to disk into something called a swap file. And now I will make that page that was vacated available to the process that needs it. So the victim process may, at some point in the future, touch that page that got pushed out to disk. It'll take a page fault. The OS will say, oh, this page, this virtual page, is a valid virtual address. It's allocated, but there's no mapping in the page table. Instead, I know, and we'll look in a minute at how it knows, instead I know that that page actually is sitting in the swap file on disk. I need to bring that in. Do I have a free physical page to bring in the contents from that swap file? If so, great. Go ahead and allocate the physical page, bring in the page that was swapped out. If not, I have to victimize some other page and push it out to make space for the page that I'm going to bring in. Another virtual memory feature or trick is that we don't always need to make a complete copy. So for example, in fork, we don't need to copy the parent process. We don't need to actually allocate a bunch of fresh pages, copy the parent into the child pages, and then just kind of get rid of those pages to set up the exec. So and we've also talked about how, for example, if you have multiple copies of a program, they can actually share the read-only part of the program. So a feature that allows for this kind of sharing, like between parent and child on a fork, or between two copies of the same program text, is called copy on write. So sharing data that might be written is okay as long as nobody actually writes to it. Until one of the processes that's sharing data tries to write to the shared data, there's no problem because the copies are identical. It's only when one process tries to do a write that we have this divergence. So there's a way that we can do this. We set all of the shared pages to be read-only, even if they're actually writable. So when we take the parent process and make the child copy, the heap, the stack, things that should be writable, we set them to be read-only in both the parent and the child. So now if one of the processes tries to write to that, let's say in the child, it's going to do a little bit of computation and modify the stack before it does exec. When it tries to modify the stack, it will take an exception because it's trying to write to pages that are marked read-only. And so when that happens, what we're going to do is we're going to recognize in the OS that this should be writable, that this was set up as copy on write. We'll make a copy, and now we can mark both the original and the copy to be writable, and now the parent and the child each have a writable copy of that page of the stack. And if, let's say now there's a context switch and the parent comes back onto the processor and modifies some more of the stack, we'll do that for each page in the stack that the parent is modifying. And that way, the writes become private to the individual process, but we only do it sort of as needed. And a lot of the pages in the process that we forked and copied are actually never modified. And so we only need to make copies of the pages that are actually being touched. So that feature is called copy on write. And the way this works is that before the copy, let's say we have these pages that are writable. See the write bit there in the middle column? We make two copies. So now we have two processes with two page tables with the same virtual addresses in this particular case. So this, for example, could be the parent. And we made a copy of the child, same virtual addresses, but we set the write permissions on each of these virtual pages to be zero, so they're read-only. And now let's say that one of the processes tries to do a write. It sees that in the address translation process of virtual to physical address translation, that even though there's a valid mapping, that mapping doesn't allow write. So that triggers a fault, and the OS comes in and makes a new page. So notice previously here that in each of these two processes, the virtual addresses map to the same physical pages. We're sharing. That's part of the copy on write. But when we actually need to make the copy in response to the write, now we've allocated a fresh physical page here. See, this virtual page number here is different. And we mark this writable. And then actually the next step would be to allow the parent to write to that page as well. So another way of looking at this is, let's suppose we have the parent, and it looks like this. It does a fork, so we make a copy of the child. The child page table is, let's say, here in memory. So the page table is an actual copy, just like we saw on the previous slide. And now let's say that the parent writes. So these pages here were being shared between the parent and the child. And now upon the write, we have to make a copy here to, sorry, the write is happening here. So we have to make a copy so that each process has its own page. And now that parent and the child are still sharing all the pages that haven't been modified, but they have their own private copies of this one page that the parent tried to write to. So, any questions so far? Copy on write is a really cool, efficient feature. If the idea makes sense, then that suggests that you are pretty comfortable with some of the things that you can do with virtual memory. If you have questions, that suggests that you might have more general questions about virtual memory. Yes?
So when the copy on write happens and the child now has its own copy on memory, if you went ahead and changed that child copy, it wouldn't affect the parent copy because they're two separate ones.
Exactly. So if we go back up here to this page table, at this point in time, we've responded to the write exception when this particular process tried to write to this virtual address by allocating a new physical page. So now in this process, this virtual address points to this place in physical memory. The corresponding virtual address in the other process is pointing to a different place in physical memory. And that's how they can share pages and yet preserve the illusion that they're completely separate processes. Because remember, after a fork, the parent and the child shouldn't be able to see the modifications that each of them are making, with the exception of shared files. But and so that allocation of the fresh page is how we achieve that. Other questions? Okay. And then sort of toward the end of the last class, we also talked about how the upper half of the address space is reserved for the operating system. And in this case, only some of that virtual address space is actually in use by the operating system. So when we're running operating system code, we need memory for things like buffers and data structures to support the operating system functionality. So the operating system is going to have its own page table that maps these high-order addresses up here, these high-order virtual addresses, to places in physical memory. So, whoops, I got ahead of myself here. And that page table will be separate. And those pages are marked as being not usable, not readable or writable in user mode. so that the user process cannot touch these high-order virtual addresses that are reserved for the operating system. That way the user level code not only can't modify the operating system state, but it can't even inspect the operating system state. Otherwise, if the OS state were writable, obviously, that would allow a user level process to have operating system privileges by modifying OS state. And even if it were only readable, it would allow information to leak out of the operating system. Another virtual memory feature is something we touched on briefly, which is memory mapping of files. So we can open a file like this, and then we can mmap it. And what mmap will do is return a pointer. And what it's actually doing is it's allocating a region of the virtual address space for that file. And so you can think of every byte position in the file having a corresponding byte position in this region of virtual address space. And the beginning of that region of virtual memory, it's just a virtual address, so that's a pointer. So mmap returns this pointer, and now we can access this like any regular pointer. So we can, for example, treat it as an array. And if we want to access the sixth byte of this array, of this file, we could just treat it as an array, index it with six. And I mean, that's the seventh character, right? Because 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, everything's zero based in C. Or let's say we want to write to the 101st byte of this file. So we could say data of 100 is equal to something or other. So we've basically allowed a file to be abstracted as a buffer, as an array, by doing mmap. And so what mmap does is allocate a region of virtual addresses, and it probably only reads pages worth of, you know, whatever your page size is, it only reads pages of that file when you try to access them, using the same mechanism we talked about before for demand allocation. So you try to access a virtual address, like one of these examples, and the OS says, oh, that virtual address is not mapped, but it's actually, that virtual address doesn't have a corresponding physical address, but that virtual address is mapped to this file. So I will allocate a fresh page. I know that the contents should come from the file, so I'll go read the corresponding pages worth of information from the correct location in the file into this freshly allocated physical page. So how does the OS know what these different regions are? It has a separate data structure in addition to the page table that it's a basically a list of structs that describe each contiguous region of memory. And so you can actually inspect this. You can, on Linux, say cat /proc/self/maps, and you'll be able to see some information like this. So for example, there are several different regions here that are allocated for /bin/cat. There's some heap. Here's some shared library regions that are mapped into the virtual address space, stack, et cetera, et cetera. So the OS has a list of data type struct, VM area structs. And this says that from virtual address start to virtual address end, some contiguous region here, what the permissions are, whether there is a backing file, that's actually here. And for this particular VM area struct contiguous blob, where does it sit in that file? So if there's a direct correspondence between one of these areas, VM areas, and let's say a program file, then the area starts at offset zero in the file. And then it will also have information. You'll have VM area structs for other kinds of regions that may not correspond to files. But as you saw, there's information there about stack, heap, and so on. If you have a shared memory region, like you did in lab, that would have a corresponding VM area struct, and so on. So you can conceptually think of each of these VM area structs as corresponding to one contiguous segment of the virtual address space that has a specific purpose. So code, stack, heap, mmapped files, shared libraries, and so on. So when the kernel takes a page fault on a virtual address, it uses these VM area structs to figure out, is that an actual fault that should be treated as a seg fault? Or is that actually something that I need to handle and allocate some physical memory so that I can handle it properly? Like, for example, with copy on write, or allocating a new page of the stack to allow the stack to grow, or some of these other examples we've looked at. Okay, so before I go on any further, any questions?
I'm sorry, you might have mentioned this earlier, but what does offset and backing file mean?
So the backing file is whether this particular segment corresponds to a file on disk.
Yeah.
And that might be because the segment represents the program, so the backing file is the actual program, like a.out, or you might have mmapped a file. And the pointer is basically telling the OS where on disk this file is. And the offset is, does this segment start at the beginning of the file, so the offset is zero, or does this segment sit somewhere in the middle of the file? So for example, with swap, you might have different VM area structs that correspond to different processes that are all sort of intermingled in this swap file. So the virtual memory state really consists of two things. One is the page table, which you use on every load and store and every time you increment the program counter. And then the VM area structs that tell you what the different sort of larger scale segments are and what their properties are. So the page table has for every single page details about that page. Is it writable, et cetera, et cetera. The VM area structs give you larger granularity information that supplements the page table. So when you take a page fault, when you take an exception due to a virtual address that doesn't have a physical mapping, the OS knows what to do with that. Is that actually a valid virtual address that we need to support by allocating a physical page, or is it actually just an invalid reference? And I call these segments because in older operating systems, before they figured out that fixed size pages were a good idea, there was this idea of segmented memory where the segments were variable sizes. They corresponded roughly to these VM area structs, although this was Unix, and they were called segments, and when you didn't have a valid when you had an virtual address that didn't correspond to a valid segment, well, that was where we get the name segment fault, seg fault. Okay, so let's go through a few examples here and make sure that we're comfortable with translating virtual addresses to physical memory and finding the contents. So here in these right two columns, what we've got is a region of contiguous virtual memory that goes down like this and then continues on over here. And for each contiguous blob of four physical addresses. We actually have some sample contents in memory. So like for physical address 0, the contents are 0. For physical address 1, the contents are 1. And so on, up to physical address 3, the contents are 3. Then we wrap around to the next row, physical address 4, the contents are 4, and so on. So, here's a sample page table. Now, if we have 8-byte pages, that means each physical page consists of 2 of these rows here, right? 8-byte pages, 1-byte, 2-bytes, 3-bytes, so on, up to byte 7. Now, why are there 2 digits there? Because remember, a single hex digit only represents 4 bits. A byte is actually 8 bits, so we need 2 hex digits to represent the contents of the bytes. So let's say here, 33, hex 33, is 0011 0011. And that would be the contents that are at physical address 0x000 blah 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 003. And just for convenience, we pretend that the bytes, that the contents of that byte are actually the hex value 33. Everybody with me so far? Okay, so let's take these 4 virtual addresses and figure out what their contents are. So let's start with 0x18. So 0x18 is 11000. Why? Because 0x8 is 1000. And then we have this extra 1 here. Okay, so we have 8 byte pages. So that means that this here is our offset, right? 2 to the 3 is equal to 8. So we have 3 bits of offset. So that means that this here is our virtual page number. So we go to virtual page number 11, and that corresponds to physical page 000. We've just, for purposes of this example, we have 2-bit virtual page numbers, but 3-bit physical pages. So that means in any given process's address space, we can only have 4 pages in the virtual address space in this toy example. But in the actual physical memory, because we have 3 bits available for physical page number, we can have up to 8 pages represented. Okay, so physical page number 000 is going to be this page, right? And what's our offset? Our offset here, let me pick another color, is 0, which means we're going to pick the 0th byte in that physical page. So what is the contents of virtual address 0x18? It is the actual byte data 0x00. Everybody comfortable with this example? So let's take a little bit of time here, and why don't you talk to somebody next to you, and let's figure out 0x03, the next example. What is the actual byte value, bytes of data that are stored at virtual address 0x03? So you'll want to kind of follow the example that I did here, the process. Thank you. Okay. So let's go through this example here. So zero X, I don't need to write that. So we're going to look at virtual page number 0, and we're going to find that the physical page number is 010. By the way, in the last step, I forgot to check. We need to do this and make sure the mapping is valid. And there's a 1 there, so it's valid. So we're going to go down here to physical page number 010. Now, what's the offset? Sorry, this is 1. I got sloppy here. So 3 is 1, 1, right? So our offset is byte 3. So offset 0, 1, 2, 3. So the value is that. Everybody good with that? Okay, now let's try the next one. 0x0a. And just to help you out here, I'll write the binary mapping. Okay, so let's work through this example. So 0x0a is equal to 01010. Because a is 1010, and those lower order 3 bits are our offset. The upper 2 bits are our virtual page number. So we come over here to virtual page number 01. We check that it's valid. It is. We take the physical page number, which is 111, which is over here. And now what's our offset? 010 is 2. So we go 0, 1, 2. So the contents are DC. Question.
How did you get to the physical address like 0x38
under C? So 111 is, so we're numbering here, this is, I'm gonna erase this so that I have room to write. This is page 000. So those are the physical page numbers. And when you combine that with the bits of the offset into a full physical address, then the way the bits work out, you end up with that hex value. So everybody comfortable with this? Any questions? So you see there's a pattern here. You take the virtual address, and in the hardware, it's just bits, right? So the hardware is going to peel off the offset bits and use them after it gets the physical page number. It's going to take the remaining bits as the virtual page number, look in the corresponding entry of the table, and the entries in the page table are just numbered. It's going to go to the correct location and read the contents, and it's going to first check that that mapping is valid, and if so, then it's going to actually also check if the access type is correct. Readable, writable, or permissions corresponding, user versus system. So there's some other bits there. And then it's going to take the physical page number, concatenate it with the offset, and use that to address the correct byte. Or if this is an int access, then it will take corresponding number of bytes and use that those contents of memory as the value that's being read or written. Okay, so what about 0x13? Just in the interest of time, I'll just tell you that 0x13 is equal to 10011. So this is our virtual page number. We come over here, the valid bit is zero, so that's a fault. Now, what do we do with that fault? Well, we need to know if that's really a fault that should generate a seg fault, or whether we should do some demand allocation, like we talked about earlier. So any questions? So generally speaking, there's a set of page table tricks or features that we can take advantage of. We can use the permission bits to generate a page fault or a protection fault that we can use to actually provide another feature like copy on write. So we don't assume that the fault is an error. We first have to see what the fault means by looking in the virtual address map, the VM area struct, to see what that particular virtual address represents. Is that virtual address part of a valid code segment, or is it actually in unallocated memory? And then if it's a valid code segment, we do the correct thing, which is typically going to be to allocate a fresh page and then fill it either with zeros, like if we're growing the stack, or to fetch the corresponding bytes from a file. And so we have separate data structures. These are the VM area structs to represent logically allocated memory. So that messy map that I showed up here is basically a way of saying this range of virtual addresses is the stack, and it's writable, and so on and so forth. And remember, the page table is for the hardware, because the hardware typically is doing the page table walk, although this isn't true in all operating systems. In some operating systems, when there's a virtual address exception, the OS completely handles the page table walk. But this, all of this is happening in a level of the system that the user level process can't see. The user level process has no notion of physical memory. It only knows about virtual addresses. There's some other features that virtual memory provides. We all already talked about allocating space on demand and loading code and data from files on disk on demand. We talked about copy on write. We talked about swapping already. So that's when you have too much active virtual memory that's in use, you don't have enough physical memory. So when something happens like growing the stack, you need to push a page that's currently allocated out to disk. So you swap it out, you make that vacated page available, and then later if the swapped page is needed, you swap it back in. Detecting whether memory was read or written recently is used for the page replacement policy. Without getting into the details, the OS needs a way to decide when it has to swap something out, which particular page from which particular process is going to be the victim. And there are a bunch of heuristics. The basic idea is you pick the least recently used page or a not recently used page on the assumption that it hasn't been used in a while and it won't be used for a while in the future, and that's what you swap out. And to do that, you need a way to keep track of whether a page has been accessed recently. How do we do that? We turn off the valid bit for the page, and when we get an invalid mapping, we check our VM area struct. We say, oh, that actually is a valid mapping. So that means that this page fault is actually just for purposes of tracking the utilization. We update our recency structure with the fact that this page has been accessed recently. We restore the valid bit, and we repeat the operation and continue on our merry way. We can also use this to enable stopping in a debugger when a variable is modified. So let's say you've set a watch on a particular variable. How do we do that? Well, one way is to set that page to be non-writable. So when the process tries to write to that variable, it traps into OS. The OS sees it as an invalid access. The OS doesn't know about that the debugger is anything special. So that's going to generate a seg fault, but the debugger registers a seg fault handler. So the seg fault activates the debugger seg fault handler. The debugger says, oh, this isn't really a seg fault. This is activating a watch point. And so it handles the watch point and notifies the user. And so virtual memory is one way to enable that. And then some research done by our department chair, Professor Dwarkadas, has looked at actually using virtual memory to provide the illusion that you have shared memory across two different machines that are just connected by a network. So if you have multiple chips on a single motherboard, they actually share physical memory. But if you have two separate machines that are just connected by Ethernet, they don't really share physical memory. But you can provide an illusion of an extended address space that's shared by both of these machines or a whole cluster of machines by having accesses to addresses that are mapped to one of the other machines actually generate a page fault, and the operating system catches that. The operating system has to be written to know that you're doing this virtual shared memory, this distributed shared memory, and say, oh, this address is really just an access to this page over here. So I will generate the network request to fetch that page, bring it into my local memory, and then serve it to the local process. And so that way you can simulate shared memory across a distributed set of machines, which is a lot easier for programming than having every interaction between the machines have to be implemented as a network request, some kind of network message. So there were several researchers who looked at this in the 90s and early aughts. Professor Dwarkadas worked on a very influential system called Treadmarks that did this. So the hardware provides help for all of these features by, upon an invalid virtual address exception, recording the address of the faulting virtual address in a special register that the OS can inspect. So the hardware has this special register. There are basically extra registers that are defined in the architecture definition that regular user programs can't access. The compiler won't try to use these registers, but in fact, the OS can use these special registers. And in fact, these special registers are only accessible when you're in supervisor privileged mode. And by default, if the OS doesn't terminate the program, it will rerun the instruction that caused the exception. So after you sort of cleaned up the page table to fix the bit that caused the fault that the OS made happen in the first place to implement one of these tricks, then you can repeat the instruction and it works correctly. There's another property that it's useful to be aware of, which is an important part of most architecture definitions, and that is that the system will provide what's called precise exceptions, so that the system and if the fault goes all the way to the debugger or terminates the program, the user will know which instruction actually caused the exception. And so you want no side effects from other instructions to sort of corrupt the state. When the debugger, for example, catches some exception, the debugger wants to be able to see the exact state of the system when the fault happened, or when the watch point was triggered, or the breakpoint was triggered, or whatever the case might be. Okay, so moving right along, let's talk about how page tables are represented in memory. So here we're going to use a simpler example that fits on the slide of a 16-bit or 2-byte page table entry. And an example, and different operating systems, different architectures, sorry, different hardware architectures, not OSs, different hardware architectures can represent these bits in different ways, so this is just illustrative. But we might define that the page table entry will be in this format, where the high order bit is our valid bit. Then we have the necessary bits for our physical page number. And then we have some other bits that, for example, indicate whether this page is writable, whether it's user level or system level memory, and so on. So remember, a page table can be quite big. For a 32-bit address, 4 bytes, it's 4 megabytes. For a 16-bit virtual address space, it's 2 to the 16th, which is 64 kilobytes of memory. So if you've ever read any history of the early Intel architectures that had 16-bit addresses, they worked on chunks of memory that were 64 kilobytes. So anything that big has to be stored in memory. Not on disk, although disk has plenty of space, disk is way too slow. So part of the state of every process that the operating system keeps track of is where in memory the page table is stored. So if we think of memory as this huge linear array, there will be some region in memory that's set aside for each process's page table. So if you think of memory as being like way off the slide here, there's a chunk of this system's memory that's storing this process's page table. And maybe down here is another process's page table. And down here is another process's page table. And then other parts of memory are holding these processes, code and data and stack and the operating system data structures and so on. So memory has to be big enough to store these page tables in a reasonable amount of the process's active state. Because what happens if we don't have enough physical memory for the pages that are being used on a regular basis? Well, we're going to do a lot of swapping. And then we'll spend all our time moving stuff in and out of disk, and we won't get useful work done, and that's called thrashing. Without worrying about that, though, let's just look at one page table. So each of these rows, starting from the base of this process's page table down to here, and note the dot, dot, dot here, right? This page table, even for a 16-bit virtual address space, is way too big to fit on one slide. So, you know, we're just showing the first few entries of the page table and the last two. But let's take some particular address. The base of this page table is here. And if, let's say, our physical page number were 0, it would be this first entry here. And we'll see that this particular mapping is not valid because the valid bit is 0. Now, here is the, again, this is not a valid mapping, but if it were, these set of bits would be the physical page number. And then these last four bits would be the other bits, like the writable bit and so on. So when you read a page table entry, you get out a certain number of bytes, in this case, 2 bytes, 16 bits, and you have to pick apart the bits the way I've just shown here. So, sorry about the noise. So the page table, logically, that we've looked at in our examples looks like the lower left here, but the way it's actually stored in memory looks like this, right? So we've been showing it with other bits here in the middle, but they're actually kind of these last four bits. The physical page number is this sort of middle chunk of bits, and the valid bit is up here at the front. Any given hardware architecture can define a specific way of formatting its page table entries, right? There's nothing magic about this ordering. This is just one example. So, I already went over this, so I'm going to skip ahead here. So let's look at an actual memory access here. So let's say our virtual address looks like this, and we have this is, let's say, a 20-bit address space. With 12-bit offset, which gives the 12 addresses, which gives us 4 kilobytes pages. So when we want to translate this virtual address, we're going to take off the virtual page number, which is up here. And we're simply going to add, we're going to take that number and multiply it by the page table entry size, because we need to know basically a byte position in memory. So in this case, the page table entry size is 2 bytes. So we're going to take that entry number times bytes per entry and add it to the offset, and that gives us the location in memory. So the The page table entry address in memory is equal to the base address plus virtual page number times bytes per page table entry. So we'll see an example here. But once we get that address, we can go read the corresponding bytes. In this case, it's 2 bytes out of memory. That's our page table entry, which is a packed set of bits. And now we need to split the page table entry into parts. And the first thing we're going to do is check if that entry is valid. And then if the writable and so on bits allow for the kind of access that we're doing. And if so, we'll take the physical page number bits and append them, concatenate them with the offset. So here, for example, we took out the valid bit and checked the writable bit and so on and said this is a valid mapping. And we got the physical page number and we concatenate it with the offset. Notice I'm being very careful here to say concatenate, not add, right? So we just take the bits and put them next to each other. And you'll notice here, even though they're both in purple, that the virtual page number and the physical page number here are different, right? So although we didn't really show it, we went through the process we've just done in previous examples to take that page table entry, find the physical page number bits, and pull them out. And if this is being done in hardware, there's actual Boolean logic there that picks out the wires that take the appropriate bits and route them to the appropriate place so that the right things happen. So this block here is what we call our memory management unit. So most architectures will have a memory management unit that does this to allow for virtual memory to be implemented. Now, notice that the process of doing the translation might require multiple memory accesses. So you have to take the virtual page number, you have to find the corresponding page table entry in memory. If you're lucky, that hits in the cache. Otherwise, you have to actually read it out of DRAM. And then you have to actually go fetch the data that you want. Now, later we'll see that for really large address spaces, we need a multi-level page table. So instead of just one memory read to find the page table entry, we may have to look in multiple tables and do multiple memory accesses. And this gets very expensive. So that's why we have this translation look-aside buffer hardware to speed this up that I've mentioned a couple times. We won't go into that. I just mentioned that in the actual hardware, every virtual address translation is not doing all these memory accesses because that would be way too expensive. There's hardware to accelerate that. And TLB stands for translation look-aside buffer. And so before we go on to the next item, I'll just stop here and see if people have any questions. So let's go through an example with small numbers so that it fits on a slide. So let's say we have 6-bit virtual addresses, 6-bit physical addresses, 8-byte pages, and 1-byte page table entries. So let's translate the address 0x31 here. Okay, we're going to translate virtual address 0x31, and our base page table register holds the value 0x20. So this is the address in memory where the page table starts. So first, we want to take the hex address and represent it as bits. It's very hard mentally to do these examples unless you represent things in binary. Of course, in the hardware, they're in binary, right, already. So 0x31 looks like this. This is our offset. Remember, we have 8-byte pages, 2 to the 3. So we have 3 bits here for the offset. So the remaining bits are our virtual page number, 110, here, right? How many bytes is each page table entry? 1 byte. So we multiply by just 1 here. So conceptually, you can think of the page table lookup is starting at the base address, which is 0x20, and counting the appropriate number of bytes. In this case, it's 110 times 1 to get to the correct address. So 110 is 6. We're multiplying by 1. So the address we access is 0x26. So we go to the virtual, to the memory address 0x26, which is here, right? This is 24, 25, 26. Now, here I'm not showing just a page table. This is just a snippet of raw memory laid out the way that we did before, starting at address 0, going on up in groups of 4 bytes. Our page table starts here, right? 0x20, that's the base of the page table. And we're at entry 6, so entry 0, entry 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, otherwise, you know, known as address 0x26, because base register plus 6 gives us this. What are the contents? 0xf6. Represent that as binary. So it's in binary, it's 1111 0110. That's our byte of page table entry. Now, in our page table format, we have the physical page number, the valid bit, and so it's valid. And the physical page number is 111. So we take 111 plus the offset here. Let me pick a different color. We concatenate those. That is our address, 111001. In hex, that would be 0x39. So I kind of got out of sync with the slides here, but 0x39 is this address right here. So the contents are 0C. So any questions? Yes?
What are the 4 bits that are stored in the
page? So this is our physical page number. This here is our valid bit. And these are our other bits, writable, et cetera. So do people feel like they follow this example? Because we might ask you to do something like this on a quiz. Okay, so I'll stop here, and we'll do another example at the beginning of the next class, kind of like this. And stuff like this is really helpful to also be keeping up with the readings if you haven't been. And good luck on the timing assignment.